you know, the world is messy, you know, and it's getting messier. And we look out there and we think, how in the world am I ever going to be able to make any changes and do anything worth value? And then, you know, what I love about coffee is that it's so simple, you know, how you choose to purchase, you know, can make such an enormous difference. And it really can flip whole countries.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. Welcome once again, everyone, to Rochester Business Connections on the Real Business Connections Network. I am here today with Kathy Turiano. Kathy, what's up? How are you today?
Ben, I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to have a fun conversation about not just coffee, but the business behind coffee. I know a lot of my listeners are coffee drinkers. You are the founder, owner, CEO. You all those things?
I am all those things. Yes,
so lots of hats.
Yes. Lots of hats.
Joe Bean Coffee Roasters from my hometown in Rochester, New York. And you guys make coffee, but it's not a typical coffee shop model. You've been through a lot of iterations. How long has it been? Like, I think I remember 17 years.
Yes. We started in 2005. So you are absolutely correct. 17 years. We've been making coffee and doing coffee and talking coffee and drinking coffee. So
drinking coffee. That's the best part.
It is the best part. Yes. We like our own product. Yes, very much.
So let's start 17 years ago, 2005. What was the reason you started Joe Bean Coffee Roasters, other than the fact everyone loves coffee? What was the vision there? And then we'll kind of move up to today, where it seems like the vision and structure has changed over time. But let's go way back to 2005. Where were you? Why'd you start it? Tell me about the start.
Sure. Oh boy. Let's see. we're 17 years ago. So, my husband and I actually at the time, were youth leaders, in our congregation, and we were working with junior high school, college students, and young adults. And, we decided that one of the things we wanted to do is open up our home. And so on Friday nights, we had kind of an open door policy. And any of them that came, primarily we end up with college students and young adults. But if they came, we fed them. And we didn't really have any other agenda. It really was just being together and eating together and just getting to know one another. And that model, really, I saw stuff in that. I recognized that there were things missing in their lives. And it really was about community. And so right around that time, I started doing a lot of research about community and, you know, sort of looking at what was out, you know, in different places and, you know, sort of European models of community and, you know, the U.S. models of community. This is, now keep in mind, this is way back in 2005, you know, and it wasn't, I know we talk about community a lot now, but, you know, back then it wasn't as big of a topic. And, you know, we recognize that for a generation, there really was something missing, you know, and that was public places. And, you know, when people talk about why they love a city, why they're connected to a city, most of the times they say, I love Rochester, I love Chicago, I love New York City. And then they tell you the places that they eat and drink. And that's why they love it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, connecting in with public places is a pivotal piece for people to feel a part of the fabric of a place that they live. It's not just about your family. It's also about feeling a bigger sense to the community. And so that really was our initial kind of motivation to start Jobeam, was to create a spot that specifically that age group, you know, would start to feel connected to. So that's what we did. We did it within the neighborhood that we lived in, which happened to be in the suburbs. And we did it for a few years. It was about a 3-year ride at that moment. And we did great. We were successful as far as connecting people and bringing people together. But I always say that, you know, we were missing the point of making money. We didn't actually make any money at that moment. And so, you know, we took a little bit of a hiatus and kind of reevaluated what we were doing and why we were doing it, and decided that we needed to have our own product line. Like at that point, we weren't roasters. And so we took a 3-year hiatus from the business to learn how to roast. And in that whole moment, the whole world changed for me. We started recognizing that there was a lot going on in specialty coffee in the United States that was not happening at all in Rochester or even in upstate New York. That there was a whole movement of, you know, kind of third, fourth wave coffee places that we were not a part of. And so that whole thing, not just was about us roasting and learning how to have our own product line, but also about what was going on and how to bring it to the city in which we live.
That's fantastic. Why, yeah. To go back a little bit, why'd you choose coffee for this community building? Why specifically coffee?
So my business partner, she ended up being my business partner. She was one of the young women that would come to our house on Friday nights, Dina, and her would-be husband, Aaron, were both two young people that came to our house, and they loved coffee and they saw coffee as the avenue. And it's kind of embarrassing to say that I was not a coffee drinker. I mean, I liked it, but I really, It was not a big part of my world. And it really was them that said, this is the place and this is the way to go about what we want to accomplish is coffee. So, you know, that was kind of their call. And then over time, I began to recognize, especially when we started understanding what was going on with specialty coffee, that they were calling in something that was already going on, you know, in places like New York City, San Francisco, where people were gathering around coffee. But it wasn't just about having coffee. It was actually about having purpose. So that is sort of our second evolution, if you will. You know, our first one was, you know, this whole idea of community building. But for a long time, I sort of missed the point that community is much more powerful when it has purpose. And so our move in 2011, we moved to the city of Rochester, and we purposed to move there for several reasons. One was that was really where the generation that we kind of wanted to connect with primarily were living. And also, we really wanted to uphold Rochester, to be an advocate for Rochester. We recognize that, you know, if you're in the suburbs, it's one thing, but you have to hold up the core. The core has to be successful for the suburbs to be successful. And so much effort was going on in Rochester at that time around the suburbs, but not a lot of effort was happening to the core, to the city itself. And we wanted to be a part of the development of that. And so in 2011, when we moved, we built out what became Rochester's first espresso bar and first, you know, third wave place. And what started gathering around our coffee bar, just from our customers, was really this dialogue about what could be. And that's an exciting dialogue. You know, we're all drinking coffee and talking, and of course, you're drinking coffee, so you're really alert. Right. Conversation. But I do think that is a piece of it. You know, we're not a bar, you know, we're feeding them coffee. And so, you know, we can collect throughout the day and collect a very different group of people, you know, from the morning to the afternoon to the evening. And what really happened was sort of this explosion of we love our city among a generation. And it really wasn't there before. And then also kind of came out of that, many, many of our customers actually launched things. So we saw the launch of urban breweries, which really were not there until, you know, prior to 2011. The first food truck launched, urban winery, you know, launched, our first urban winery in Rochester launched. Coffee, the specialty coffee movement launched. You know, we started, and then many of the baristas that had, you know, have worked for us over the years started launching their own places. You know, and at first that feels a little like, oh no, you know, competition or, but it really was okay because we actually understood that it was part of a larger movement within the city of Rochester. And interestingly enough, you know, we also started seeing on a national platform, Rochester started getting mentioned for culture, you know, for food and you know, food and drink culture, and specifically for coffee culture, which really, you know, those are, whether people recognize it or not, those statistically are how you build a city. You know, you build the hospitality industry, you build the food and the wine and the beer and the coffee, you know, in those things, because that's what brings people together. And that's what then starts going out there and people start talking about. So I guess that was sort of our first whole thing was purpose was all about Rochester. But then we got kind of bigger than that. So
and we'll get into that in a moment. You're spot on. People remember, where did they go? Entertainment, food, people, hospitality. It sounds like you guys are really at a tipping point of something that was going to get huge in coffee, but amazingly just in Rochester culture as a whole. I'm wondering, because I want to get into the vision further in a second. But one thing I was curious about is you guys see the end goal and the possibilities in specialty coffee. You decide we're going to shut down. We're going to learn how to roast. We're going to kind of pivot, do something different here. A lot of people are afraid to do that. I know personally, I'm afraid to do that because what happens to my current customers? What happens to my current income? What did that transition look like? Were you operating at a loss? Did you have to get investors? Like, you paused what you were doing to completely work on something new. What did that transition look like for you?
Super scary. that, you know, to be honest, we, when we initially shut down what we were doing in the suburbs, I wasn't sure how we were going to move to the next level. To be honest, my partner Dina and I wrote down a list of what would we need. You know, I have a really great mentor in my life, and she always told me, Kathy, always have a list just in case, you know, somebody comes by and asks you, what do you need? And so we wrote a list. We need a roaster. We need to, you know, go out into the industry. We need to learn, you know, things that we don't know right now. And, you know, we had a whole list. And so, within a short while of us making the decision that we had to shut down what we were doing and then pivot, but weren't quite sure how we were going to do all this, right. We actually got approached by a local businessman. And turns out his daughter was one of our tried and true loyal customers. And we had had a really big impact on her life. She sort of credited us with, she was not doing okay, just personally. And she really credited our place as being a pivotal spot for her to feel loved and welcomed and a part of the community that we lived in. And so it turned her life around. So we had a lot of favor with this guy, needless to say. And he said, I understand you guys need, you know, to make some changes. He said, I see it. He was a very smart businessman. He said, I understand it and see it. He said, what do you need? And I said, well, here's my list.
You had the list ready to go. Yeah.
I have my list ready to go. And he really helped us, you know, for the next few years. He was kind of a infrastructure for us in order to be able to make the move. He never became an official partner for us, but certainly he was a big piece of the financial pivot. And I have honestly seen that over and over again in the history of our company, that if you understand that change needs to happen, and we really have made change several times over the years, over the last 17 years, probably more than a lot of companies have made. And I think I read a business principle many years ago that talked about either slow death or radical change was the business principle. And, you know, you can keep doing what you're doing. And if it's not working, it will drain everything in you. It will drain you financially. It will drain you emotionally. And then you can't go on, you know, and it will bring you to a complete stop. And so I knew that if we kept doing what we were doing, that's where we were heading. So rather than tweak, I'm of the opinion, after understanding that principle, that you have to look at everything and be willing to let go of what is not working and move to the next. And it was interesting when we moved from where we were to the city of Rochester. We actually there's the Bay Bridge, so we crossed the Bay Bridge, and in my mind there were things that we left on one side of the bridge that we didn't bring with us, you know, and they weren't physical things. They were just ways of thinking about who we were as a company and what we were trying to do. And, you know, I kind of really saw this like moving into the new place and really adopting. It takes you years, you know, to even change what you think of yourself and your own personal identity and your identity as a business. But we've done it now a few times. So.
So you make this big change, you change your identity. A lot of it's luck, a ton of it's strategy, but a lot of it has to be some luck, where suddenly all these elements from breweries to coffee all start popping up in the city. You're right at the tipping point of that. And nowadays you've scaled and adapted and changed where you're not just serving Rochester. Your vision's like nationwide, worldwide. Like, talk a little bit about that vision, that next step. Maybe let's start with like an aha moment. Talk about that change and like talk about that vision, because I know it just gets bigger and bigger.
Sure. So, Rochester, here we are focused on Rochester and our city. And we thought, that's it. That's the purpose. You know, that's what we've come to. That's everything that we, were created, you know, to be, right, is to encourage people to love the city. But here we had this other component, which was we were just as passionate about the product that we were serving. And the more we started to understand coffee and sourcing, and the more we started to understand that's actually a big piece of what we can bring, not just to the global community that we work with, but to our customer base. And so we began to see ourselves as the bridge in between those two worlds. And we spent about 10 years. My son actually got into the business at that time, and he really was the catalyst for us focusing more on farmers and building direct trade relationships. And direct trade relationships take time. It's a slower way to buy because many of the farmers that we work with, they're small family-run farms. Mm-hmm. They only produce so much product. And so they are very choosy about who they direct trade with. And direct trade is, most people may not understand the term as much, but if we look at sourcing and all the ways that you can buy green raw product as a roaster, direct trade is probably less than 10% of that way of purchasing. So it's not the 90%, you know, it's this small segment. Yeah. So you're looking for, within that small segment, you're looking for the right partners, which is why it you know, begins to take you time. My son started going to places like Colombia, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, wow. Started meeting with the farmers. It's a big trust. There's a lot of, if they trust you, if they trust you to be a long-term partner, they're not looking for short-term partners. They're looking for long-term partners. So, you know, we recognize that we needed to build long-term partners on this one side of the equation, and we needed to build long-term customers on the other side of the equation, and then bring them both together. And we found some of the most amazing coffee partners. I honestly, it really is incredible, the ones that we found. We found people on the ground who are not just great coffee farmers, but who are dedicated to very much the same as us over here in Rochester. They're dedicated to enabling their own community to thrive. And so they want their family businesses to thrive, but they also are really dedicated to raising up all of their coffee farming families around them. And so they are, they raise the standards, they raise the quality of what you're buying. And as a result, we can pay higher wages for it because we're direct trade. We remove many, sometimes there's 3, 4, 5, 6 layers in between purchasing between you and the farmer. So if you remove all those layers, all that money can then go directly from you, the roaster, to the farmer. So you're paying substantially higher wages than what they would get if they participated in more traditional ways of selling. So
cutting out the middleman in a lot of categories.
It sounds very simple, but boy, it is so effective. And many of the coffee farmers that we work with, most of them are third or fourth generation coffee farming families. And so what we're working with is what I call the new generation of coffee farmers. And so many of them are educated. They've come to the States. They've gotten degrees in the States. And then they see things, they understand what people want here and what they're drinking here. And then they can go back to the family farm and they can raise the quality of the coffee being grown there. And then they can also help to really strategize and bring different methods of connecting with roasters. So for some of the farmers that we work with, we were their first direct trade relationship. Wow. So, yeah. And, you know, I think it's, on the other side of the equation with our customers, they love knowing that. They love knowing that what they're buying is truly making a difference. We always say that, you know, coffee is very confusing because there's tons of labels out there. Or is it organic? Is it fair trade? Is it Rainforest Alliance? You know, what is it, right? And you don't know what you're buying, and you don't know if it's really doing what, you know, it's saying that it's doing, because many of those things sound great. But we also recognize that a lot of those certifications don't mean what people think they mean. And so coffee is really about, again, about trust. You know, we always say to our customers, we'll be your coffee partner. You can trust us. We've been in this for a really long time, and we build relationships with farmers that we trust.
Talk a little bit more about those fair trade relationships and really what it does for the farmer, their business, their family. Because I can only imagine if they've never done it, you're their first ever fair trade. I know personally in my business, I hired a full-time graphic designer and quite literally in his country in Bangladesh, he was working textile industry like 80 hours a week and couldn't feed his family. And I came in, I pay him, you know, less than I would an American employee, but he feeds a family of four now. And just my relationship I've built with him and just sending him gifts on his birthday and things like that, I've just really built a great relationship with Assad. Tell me a little bit about the relationships you get to build with these farmers and really what it does. Because a lot of people are very ethnocentric and
sure.
in many cases, you do want to keep things local. But in this case, you're changing lives, right? Talk about a little bit how you get to change these people's lives.
Sure. So just one small thing. We don't call ourselves fair trade. We actually call ourselves direct trade. The difference is fair trade actually is a certification. And fair trade, I believe the current fair trade model is $1.50 a pound. So, which is poverty level, slightly above poverty level. And so you can get fair trade certified. And essentially it's an organization that comes in and says, are you paying at least $1.50 a pound? We generally pay four to five, sometimes higher, times that per pound. So our whole purchasing relationship with our farmers is all based on quality. If you like, it should be. we do not believe in that you should just have these blanket amounts of you have to pay X number of dollars, you know, per pound, because there's no incentive for the farmer to create a better product if all they're ever going to get is that dollar amount.
If you're paying them the littlest amount possible, where's the incentive for them to over-deliver in the quality of the process?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And very similar to the relationship you talked about, you know, you want to hire somebody that brings you quality. And so the more experience they have, the more value they bring to you, the more you as a business owner are willing to pay for that service. And so that really is the entry point of direct trade and the dialogue that you begin to have. You know, if you bring us this, this is what we can sell it for. So this is what we're willing to pay for that. And, you know, again, I feel like that dialogue values everybody along the way. it values your customers who you understand, you know, are looking for coffee that is it not just exceptional, but coffee that not everybody can get. So, you know, if we're working with small family farms and they, again, only have so much product and we go out of our way to build relationships, then that means we can also get our hands on that product, yeah. You know, and we can bring it to our customers. So we bring them very unique things that not everybody can find. Some of the partners that we work with, like, for example, in Colombia, we work with some organizations that then help us find those farmers. So since even though my son is our green buyer and he will go and visit, he doesn't live in Colombia, you know? And so that is the huge advantage that we have sometimes with partnering with people that can help us actually find coffee farmers. The higher up that you grow coffee in general, the better quality it is. So some of these coffee farmers are located in incredibly remote areas that you would have no idea, you know, that they were there unless you had somebody who could actually connect you with them. And so, you know, being able to find those remote sort of gems, you know, is really a huge benefit for us. But also, you know, to your point, it also brings value to the farmers themselves when you're willing to negotiate with them as business partners. You know, there's not anybody who is overseeing our relationship. You know, you and I are sitting down and I'm valuing the work that you're doing and we're negotiating a price between us. And I think even just from the standpoint of how you feel about yourself, you know, when somebody values you in a business relationship, it changes everything. And it changes the way that you then can value your workers, you know, and what you can pay, you know, your workers. So it's not the impact of that becomes, you know, exponential, right?
Exponentially.
Exponential. Yes, yeah. I said it wrong. But it really it's this it just impacts all kinds of areas. You know, when you start with one thing, you know, if you have a community and the one product that you produce more than anything else is coffee, and you're used to that not enabling anyone to thrive, it's like poverty mentality really, you know, beats people down to not expecting anything. And so when you lift that off, and you lift off that, you bring hope, right? So you lift off that discouragement and that way of looking at life, and then you bring hope. And, you know, we've seen many of our farming partners, you know, not just surviving, but then making plans, you know, and mm-hmm. and building the infrastructure of their farms and purchasing land. We had our partners in Costa Rica purchased a dilapidated farm next to them, and they actually Desafio.
Okay.
Is the name of the farm. And they took this farm and they overhauled it. They spent years over. Desafio means like destruction, right?
Okay.
And so they overhauled it and they brought new life back to these cherries. It was like a 5-year project. And now it is one of our best selling coffees. And I love the story of Cafe Finca Desafio. You know, it's actually one of my favorite stories because, you know, out of what looked dead, you know, came this spectacular coffee that we actually won an award with, a national award with it too. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. We've won a few, but it's always really special for me when we win one with a coffee that I love the story of the coffee too. So, and the family, but yeah. And again, I think the example, if one coffee farming family begins to thrive, then that the example is set, you know, and then they can put their hands out and begin to raise everyone else and saying, this is the way, you know, this is the way that you can go about most of them are afraid, you know, to change what they had been doing. Talking about, you know, you asked me earlier what it's like to change. I mean, it's the same principle, you know, if your family has been growing a certain level of coffee and then selling it a certain way, and somebody comes in and says, you know, if you connect with coffee roasters and do direct trade, you can make 3 to 4 or 5 times more. That's that can be exciting, but it can also be a very scary proposition.
I love the collective impact. There's so much going on kind of behind the scenes where it seems like it's nice to get credit for something, but sometimes the best credit is the credit that you never even started. You help one person and then they show up better to their family and they show up as a good role model and they bring in better employees and everyone's happier and more fulfilled and getting paid what they deserve. And then they value their work. And then the product they create gets better. And as the product they create gets better, they get more comfortable and confident in themselves and what they do for a living. And then they aspire for something beyond what maybe they once knew. And then they go and they get one beyond. And before you know it, you know, someone has been helped that all you did is create a slight little ripple that everybody involved, they're the ones that took action to actually go and do it. But just one small change in someone's one person's life could create all these changes. And wow, and we get to do it with coffee. We get to do it with coffee.
And you're capturing everything that I love. Like it is exciting to me. You know, I actually, as I was getting ready for this, I wrote down, you know, the world is messy, you know, and it's getting messier. And we look out there and we think, how in the world am I ever going to be able to make any changes and do anything worth value? And then, you know, what I love about coffee is that it's so simple, you know, how you choose to purchase, you know, can make such an enormous difference. And it really can flip whole countries. We work with a farmer in Honduras, and his family, Benjamin Paz is his name, and his family is just spearheaded such changes for coffee farmers down in Honduras. Honduras did not have a good reputation for coffee, and you know, was kind of considered just not good quality coffee. And him and his family decided we're going to change that, and we're going to do one simple thing. And if I can describe it, it has to do with processing. So coffee is a cherry. And so many small coffee farmers pick the cherries, and then you actually have to get the bean out of the cherry. And so the way to do that is you sell your cherry to the processing center. And then the processing center, this is sort of how commercial coffee works. The processing center throws all the cherries together, and then they process them and get the beans out, and then they sort them by quality, and then they sell them to roasters. So what Benjamin Paz and his family did, said, we're going to create our own processing center, and we're going to buy this farmer's cherry, and we're going to keep it separate all the way through the process so that he can sell directly to a roaster like Joe Bean. And wow, that's exactly what they did. And so all these small farmers then were able to enter into direct trade, whereas before they didn't even have an avenue, like they didn't even have a path, you know, to go through. And this guy and his family have had more impact on the economy of Honduras than I think probably anything else, you know, just by saying, we're going to do this simple thing. We're going to enable you to get more money. And we're going to do it by just, you know, making sure that your product is, you know, kept separate. And they're one of our Giovanni Lara is actually the farmer that we work with from Honduras. And he's a direct result of Benjamin Paz and his family working with them. So, yeah, I know. I love
it. Fantastic stuff.
It's actually my very, very favorite thing about coffee.
Yeah. And reasonably so. You guys are doing amazing things. You're starting to win big awards, and you're looking to make a global impact. Tell me a little bit, because I'm new to this whole corporation. What's this? What's that? But I know you're doing big things, and you're expanding, and you're expanding your vision. So what's going on now, and what does the future look like?
Oh, boy. Our big thing, which I know you and I talked a little bit about, we just recently got B Corp certified, which a lot of people don't know about B Corp certification, but we did it for a few reasons, is why we really wanted to be B Corp certified. It's B Corp is about, B is actually benefit for all. So it's about for-profit companies who make a choice to use their company for good and purpose to do that. And you actually have to decide to allow the certification board to come in and look at how you're sourcing, look at your internal ways that you deal with everything from, you know, your team to your customers to your sourcing vendors. And so we have been in that process. It takes about a year for somebody to come in and look at everything. It's a little bit like someone looking through your whole underwear drawer. and it was a little bit of a tough process. But the reason that we did it is twofold. B Corp is committed to people, uplifting people, and uplifting planet. Those are two really main things that we stand for. If we uplift people, as we've been talking about, not only is it good for everybody, it's actually, we get the kind of product that is, you know, that we're looking for too. Right. You know, I had read something ages ago that, you know, uplifting your vendors isn't just good to do as a person, it's actually good business, you know?
Right. But
your whole business model is built on quality product. So you have to take care of those that you're sourcing from. That's just wisdom. And
And Kathy, I feel like it's so easy to say that we are committed to overachieve expectations and provide quality customer service. It's almost like, it's almost just like a tagline these days. But the question you sometimes have to ask yourself is, what are you actually doing in those micro decisions you make to actually embody that tagline that everybody says these days? And it sounds like you're actually embodying the decisions that actually lead to top-notch customer service, but it's not just something that you put on the wall. It's something that you live every single day in your business.
Right. Because as a B Corp certified company, somebody is going to come in and ask you about it.
specifically
say, you know, those little choices that you made along the way, you know, are you doing them? Are you accountable? You know, I think sometimes as entrepreneurs, who are we accountable for? You know, we don't have boards, you know, so who are we accountable to? And we purpose to put ourselves accountable to the B Corp certification board for that very reason. So, so they come in and they ensure that we're taking good care of our vendors and our sources, but also that we're doing it in an ethical way, and that, you know, we're using compostable packaging. You know, we switched everything over in the last year. Our bags are now compostable and recyclable. Our mailers are compostable and recyclable. And, you know, once again, that's just good business. You know, I need to make sure that, that the farms that we're working with will be here in 10 years, you know, and that's not a given. You know, things are changing. And so, you know, we want to make sure that they will be here and that they will be able to produce product. And that I will have my tasty cup of coffee every morning because, you know, that's important. Right. So, they also, most of our, just another, real important point of distinction. Most of our coffee farmers, actually all of our coffee farmers, adhere to sustainable and biodiverse practices on their farm. Almost across the board, most of them are not organically certified. I think when you're a smaller farm, you make choices as to where you're going to spend your money. So are you going to spend it on infrastructure or certification fees? And 99% of the time, they spend it on infrastructure versus certification fees. So when you look at bags that have the organic certification on it, a lot of times those are coming from very much larger farms that can afford to get certified.
It's so opposite of what it's so opposite. You see organic and you're like, oh, they're taking lots of care, but it's really the bigger farms with plenty of funding that.
Yes, because this is third world countries. Right. Like we think it's the, I mean, obviously it's different in the United States, but specifically coffee, this is all third world countries. And we spend a lot of time talking to farmers and, you know, to be honest, a lot of times those certifications are also purchased. You know, there's a lot of corruption, you know, within the certification processes. Now, I don't want to, you know, say that across the board because there's certainly fantastic organizations that are doing great things, you know, in third world countries as far as organic certification. But just from what we've heard from the smaller farmers, they don't want to usually participate and can't. So, so once again, B Corp certification comes in and ensures that what we're purchasing is sustainably grown. So we can put the B Corp on there, which I think is just our commitment to our customers, you know, that we say what we're doing and we really are doing what we're doing. You know, we want them to know and to feel confident and to trust us that we are adhering to our own language, as you talked about.
So we're coming up to towards the end of the podcast, but one thing I haven't even asked you yet, which obviously it's in the show notes and people are hopefully, if they're like me, Googling and probably already have coffee in their cart. How does someone get some of this coffee in their cup? What is the best way? I know personally, I'll endorse you. I have a great client partner I work with and I just signed her up for a subscription. So it just auto mails her coffee every single month. So I can just kind of poke her and just remind her how awesome she is by sending her coffee. But what are the ways that I could get some of this coffee in my cup?
Sure. Our primary way is exactly what you just talked about, our subscription. We call it Perpetual Joy Coffee Subscription, because you're constantly getting more joy, you know, as you're getting your coffee on a regular basis, right? So it's perpetual joy. and, you know, we have a lot of subscribers, and they are an incredible base for us, because in general, we contract coffees from our coffee farmers a year to a year and a half ahead of harvest. Wow. And so the farther out we can contract with our coffee farmers, the more, you know, that they can plan and they can, you know, kind of count on us. And that is all tied to us. That's all tied to how many subscribers we have. Because then we can count on that, you know? And so our Perpetual Joy is super flexible. You can pick how many bags you want to get. You can pick how often you want to get it. And then we run it like a CSA model. So what that means is we're constantly changing out the coffees based on the harvests. So because we have coffees all from, you know, farmers all over the world, there's always something that's coming in and always something that's new in harvest. So we bring things through. So JoeBeanRoasters.com is our website. You can also just purchase bags from our website, JoeBeanRoasters.com. We do have a retail store here in Rochester, so you can come in and purchase directly from us. And then, of course, we actually have a lot of wholesale partners that we work with as well. One of our big ones is Williams-Sonoma, so you can actually check us out if you happen to be in New York City, Connecticut, or Rhode Island. So,
awesome. Again, I subscribed my friend just because I wanted to share some of that perpetual joy, but I didn't realize how it worked and how it's like different coffees based on the harvest. I'm actually a little jealous. I'm probably going to sign myself up as well. I didn't know quite how that worked. Wow. What else is there? Is there any big, but we're about to go into the rapid fire round where we just go through short, sweet, whatever, you can cross them out, easy to answer questions. But is there any big questions or big visions that I forgot to ask you that you want to touch on before we go rapid fire?
Boy, Ben, I don't know.
We covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, we covered a lot of ground. You know, I got to talk coffee. We do have a new YouTube channel that we launched not that long ago. One of the things as we kind of pivoted and moved our business around, we used to spend a lot more time one-on-one kind of teaching people about how to brew coffee at home, you know, how to maybe tweak your grinder, you know, things that it's funny, people bring the bag home and they think, I know how to make coffee. And then they get it home and think, maybe I don't, you know, maybe I don't really understand how to make it as good as my barista. Right. We've launched a series called Brew Like Your Barista, you know, little tips that, you know, if you go to your coffee shop and they consistently make better coffee than what you make at home, there's probably just a few things that you can tweak in your home system to kind of consistently get that level of coffee, or maybe even a little better, you know, at your house. So our YouTube channel and our website, we now have a whole series of educational videos out there, as well as interviews with our farmers. That was something that was really kind of a plus for during COVID. We would go down there a lot during COVID. Many of them got on Zoom, which none of them had been on Zoom before. So we then decided to actually record those things. So you can love now it. Meet our farming partners through digital age, right?
So, I love it. I'll put that all in the description, and I'll be the first one to admit, literally just like last year, I was purchasing someone a bunch of, you know, coffee from a shop, and I realized they didn't have them grinded or anything. And I got to the car and I was looking at it and I was like, if I don't know what I'm doing with this, they might not know what they're doing with this. Let's go back in and have them at least fine grind it. And then they asked like how I wanted it ground. And I was like, the best way. Well, it depends what you use.
The way you want.
You got a French press. Are you like, so I could use the education. So I'll put that YouTube in the show notes. I'll check it out myself. So rapid fire, just to close out with just easy questions. It's funny, I often open with coffee or tea.
coffee. do you want to know what kind?
let's do coffee. Yeah, a favorite kind of coffee.
Sure. Oh boy, that's a hard one for me. I'm a brewed coffee person. I like espresso shots. I like cappuccinos. I like French presses, Chemexes. I like it all. But honestly, I am a pour over, just a brewed cup of coffee. That is kind of my groove. My favorite kind of coffees are naturally processed coffees. I just really like a lot of the ones, we have two right now in our lineup, one from Ethiopia and one from Colombia. It's hard for me to say which is my favorite. I love all my coffee. They're all my children. But I really do like naturally processed coffee. So there.
Let's go.
Probably not normal answer.
It's a good answer. I love it. And it's hard to choose a favorite children. They're all incredible. So
they're all incredible.
What is a good question here? Because we're talking about coffee so much. Let's go with this. So I had a question I forgot, and then it came to mind. Now it's back. So we talked about entertainment and food and drinks, and these kind of be the things that like really help a city light up, and something Rochester is very diverse in. I'm wondering, coffee is not an acceptable answer when you're not working and you're just doing something for fun, something leisurely. What locations or kind of things do you like to do? Any favorites that you want to shout out?
Oh boy.
Places or things.
Ben, when you're in hospitality in a city, you know everybody.
Right.
You know, so it's it actually is great. I love going to I'm almost exclusively go to locally owned restaurants, just because of who I am. And I love seeing the people, it really is a small community out there. And so many of the baristas or many of the people I've known, at my bar throughout the years, work as servers or cooks or, whatever, or owners. But I would have to say, if I'm going to give a shout out, the Finger Lakes. Just overall, the Finger Lakes wineries, my husband and I during the pandemic really focused on just going there on a regular basis. That was kind of our big outing. And boy, I've really fallen in love with, as much as I liked Finger Lakes wines before, I am totally a strong advocate for Finger Lakes wines. And we're going there this weekend, actually, and spending the weekend just tooling around and going to the Finger Lakes and doing tastings. And we now have three Finger Lakes wine subscription clubs that we do, because I keep collecting them, because I understand them and I want to be there for them as well, and I want to be a part of, building their businesses, and they're producing fantastic products. So yeah, the Finger Lakes produces amazing wines. I think
some
better
of the best in the world. Some of the best in the world.
Some of the best in the world. Yep.
So exactly. It's a question like that is almost like if you're winning like a Grammy or an Oscar, and it's like, how do I thank all the people? So many people, but let's shout out at least a couple wineries or just, businesses that you support that you think are amazing that you'd recommend I check out. Maybe the three that you have subscriptions for, something like that.
Sure. Living Roots Winery. They are Rochester's only urban winery, and they were our neighbors for many, many years. Colleen is just a fantastic person. We really love those guys. They're actually carrying some of our products as well.
My girlfriend is a subscription to Living Roots. So yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I love those guys. And, they have really built, they've done so many similar things to what we did with coffee. They educated about wine, and they educated, I think, kind of a next generation who mainly weren't wine drinkers, about wine, and, started bringing them into Finger Lakes wines in particular, which I think is just kudos to them, for doing that. Anthony Road Winery is actually another one of our subscriptions that we do. They're on Seneca Lake. And then Boundary Breaks. We're actually going there this weekend. So
love it. Love it.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you go. I feel like we could go for another hour and a half. I didn't have any coffee. So if you give me a cup of coffee, I could probably do another 3 hours with you. But humbling to chat with you, Kathy. Ton of love, ton of support for all you're doing. And I really encourage people to go to the description or the show notes to check out the YouTube channel, get your perpetual joy from the website, have it delivered right to your doorstep. And we'll maybe have you back, Kathy, but it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
It's been great, Ben. Thank you so much. And the next time we chat, I'll make sure you have coffee. and we can cheers at the end with our coffee, right?
I've got a glass of water, but.
I'll make sure that you're better prepared the next time we talk. How's that?
Sounds like a game plan.
That sounds great. Thank you so much, Ben. I appreciate being on the show.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.